Welcome to the Casey Catch Up. I'm stoked to get Edo on. Edo had an awesome year of racing this year and last year too. And we talked about doing a one-on-one podcast after last year's like M2O recap. But I think Edo, you've definitely earned a call up to the podcast, and I'm stoked to have you on. So yeah, cheers.
Thank you. Finally, I made it. This is my goal all season. I just wanted to be here and be on the podcast because honestly, we haven't even done this. You're right. It's been a while.
It has. It's been a while, and it's nice catching up with you whenever I'm in Hawaii. But you definitely get a bit more quality chat on podcasts. So yeah, I'm stoked to get you on and go through learn a little bit more about you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. So I know just as I always do, I always want to get a bit of background on people that come on, and you've got a bit of a unique story, I feel like, because you're Italian, living in Hawaii. So tell us how you came to be like where you are now. So tell us your background.
Okay, so some of the numbers and years might not all add up to my age, so I'll try and be as precise as I can, but don't be too picky if you're really someone that analyzes and goes back and checks, does the math, but I'll try to be as specific as I can. So I was born in Italy, and then when I was around 4 years old, I moved to the US in I moved to Oregon for about 4 years, and then we moved back to Italy, lived in Lake Como, and then when I was, I think, 13, 14, we moved to Hong Kong. And I actually started windsurfing when I was 9 years old, when I lived in Como, because my grandparents had a house in Lake Garda, so I would go there every single weekend and all summer. And I picked up windsurfing, and I continued windsurfing throughout all my high school, even in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong actually has a really, really big windsurfing culture. Because back in the day, their only Olympic gold medal was from windsurfing. So the government pumped a lot of funding and has a lot of resources over there for windsurfing. So I lived right by the beach in Hong Kong and would windsurf like 4 or 5 times a week every day after school, and kind of tried to make the Junior Olympics. I was a second pick for Italy, so I didn't make it. And then COVID came around, and I mean, I continued windsurfing, and that's finally kind of when I hit my growth spurt, because I feel like when you're in high school and you're doing sports, you're just waiting for that moment when you grow and you can finally, play with the big boys, and all your strength gets to the top of you could ever be. And but that went when that came around, it was COVID, so it kind of shut me down, and I wasn't able to get all the results I wanted. But anyways, from there, graduated high school. I had the choice between going to the University of Hawaii or Milan, because I'm Italian, so I would have gotten a good deal, whatever, like you would in state in the US in Milan. But I got a scholarship at the University of Hawaii. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the University of Hawaii. I'm a water person. I love windsurfing. That way I can continue my passion. And that's what I did. I ended up going University of Hawaii. I started freshman year, I started the sailing team. But I realized that, I was always used to going a lot faster on windsurf, so sailing wasn't really for me. And I dropped out and quit the team. And then I just had like, I remember 6 months where I just didn't know what to do, because I was always, super competitive and had some sort of sport that I really liked to train at. In the water, out of the water, I was always busy working on myself and trying to get better. And those 6 months, I was so lost. I remember I was just like, it just really didn't feel like I was myself, until I found downwind foiling. But the way I found it was just doing Kaiko's runs and getting creative with the bumps. And then from there, I remember someone told me about this Molokai to Oahu race, and there is all this hype about it, and I was like, holy shit, maybe that's something I should try and do. And then I remember it was March of last year when I got my first stand-up paddleboard. And yeah, the first times I couldn't even stand on the board in like flat water. I remember it was so wobbly, and it was just sinking. I couldn't even like balance on it. And then by the end of the first week of me going every single day, I could paddle around on it, but would have never been able to pop up. And then I think the second week, I just said, I'm going to do a Hawaii Kai run. And worst case scenario, I'm not going to be able to pop up and I'm just going to paddle for 2 hours and a half. But hopefully, in that whole stretch, I'll be able to pop up at least once. And I mean, I could foil pretty well because of the windsurfing, and I was foiling for at least 3 years before I tried. So I was just worried about popping up, and then once I popped up, I was able to go without falling. But I remember, thinking back at it, like that's a big progression from not even being able to stand up on the board. So I think it's motivating for anyone that's getting into it now. I mean, don't be scared. It could be really quick, if you have the right tools to learn and you're motivated.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's a super interesting sort of trajectory. You know, you started, I guess, all over the place in windsurfing in Lake Como and Lake Garda. And
Yeah.
so it was like if you were to get to the Olympics, like the Junior Olympics, would that have been the IQ wind foiling?
That was right before. So for the Junior Olympics, it was this thing called Techno 293, and it was just a Dega board. It had a Dega board. It was kind of like a sailboat, so fin and Dega board. And then I went into RSX, which was an Olympic class before the IQ foiling. So just right before the foil, that's what I was doing. And then when it went to foil, it kind of really favored really heavy people. So all the, all the windsurfers, it's crazy to see the physique change from RSX, which was the Olympic class before. Everyone was like, the sweet spot was 65, 70 kilos and super fit and lean. But now it's, I think the sweet spot is like 95 kilos, because they have a 9 meter sail and a 900 centimeter front wing.
Yeah.
So you need to be really heavy to be able to go fast, which to me is crazy. Like, if you're not 6'3" or 6'5", how are you gonna get to 95 kilos and be a fit athlete?
It's funny how sports do that. They sort of favor one, physique or the other. And
Yeah.
a mate of mine, Gray Morris, got silver in the Olympics just gone, and
Oh, wow.
He's a big guy. He was playing rugby beforehand, so he's a
Oh.
yeah. It was pretty cool to follow his journey, but yeah, it's interesting. And so when did you actually learn to foil? Like, so obviously, like you said, you were foiling 3 4 years before you started the stand-up foiling.
Yeah, so the way I learned to foil was one summer. I mean, it was when foiling came out, it was always like the really cool thing that was a little bit scary. And I always wanted to get myself into like those, I don't know, kind of those interesting things. I always wanted to try and be the one to try first and kind of venture out. So on Lake Garda, I remember foiling came out, and I saw this gong foil for like 299 euros or something ridiculous. So I bought that, and then I was just doing dock starts with my friends, and I think the front wing was a 2,800 centimeter squared. It was just freaking huge, and it was dragging, but we would just pull each other with a rope. We would run on a dock and pull each other out of the water, and then from there we just pump and see how far we could go. And then from that, I got a wing for wing foiling, and I would use that to wing foil. And that's all I did in Hong Kong, was dock starting and wing foiling, till I came to Hawaii and I got towed into the first wave ever. I only had a kite foil board, and it was 18 liters. So I mean, that's all I could really do was get towed in until I got picked up by Axis, and they sent me some boards, and the local shapers over here started making foil boards, and that's when I started prone foiling.
But that was only like, what, Axis picked you up in like 2023, wasn't it? Or 20, end of 2022?
Yeah, I mean, not officially. Like, they sent me some foils and they're like, yeah, try this out. I mean, at a at a good rate. It wasn't full sponsorship, but
Yeah.
it was, I was in college, so it was good enough support for me to get going.
Yeah. I'm just like, my mind's boggling. You only started paddling into waves in like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like people will be losing their mind. It's like, man, this guy's a. Obviously, you had like, you sort of mentioned it earlier, like the, you know how to train, and you work towards something, and you can definitely see that because you've certainly, in 2 years, I guess, of foiling in the ocean, like, and I sort of, I guess the dock starting is good training because you learn how to pump, but I sort of see wing foiling as almost like assisted foiling, like you're powered up. It's pretty different when you let go of the wing. So,
Yeah.
like to me, it's super impressive. I'm even more impressed.
Doesn't feel like that I mean it feels like a long time ago, but if you think of the numbers, it's really not that long ago.
Yeah. That's cool. And then so the and this like learning to stand up on the foil. I remember when you so Edo joined the Coach Casey Club, I guess it was March 2022 or
Yeah.
2023. Yeah.
Or yeah, I think it was might have been 2023.
Yeah, 23. Yeah, it was. It was just before Molokai. He's like, I want to do
Yeah.
Molokai. Yeah. And you uploaded a video of you trying to paddle up the, I think it was the 899.
Huh.
And I was like, man, this kid's so close to already doing it. Are you kidding? And you're like, yeah, I've been stand up for like a couple weeks now, and I really want to be able to paddle up this 899. And yeah, you think you got it pretty quick, which everyone was pretty
I
amazed.
remember going every single day. I was getting so frustrated, and like, I mean, I was taking it really seriously, like, because I was only in college, so I didn't have to work or anything. So all my focus was just finish school, foil, 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 foil. You know,
Yeah.
now I started working, and I realized how much tougher it is for people that, you know, have to make money and pay the rent to be able to focus on it's. It's just a hobby at the end of the day, so you can't put 100% of your efforts into foiling all the time.
Yeah. And then what was so before like what was the longest run you did before last year's M2O? Like obviously on Oahu you limited a little bit.
Yeah, I think before the M2O, I'd done I did do a practice run, like a practice M2O run. I tend to do that every single year, like maybe a week or two before the race. I'll get my escort boat to drive me all the way up to Molokai and do a practice run. I
Yeah.
think that helps a lot, especially in terms of like, you know, supplements and hydration and trying all that stuff out and making sure that you have enough water. Just running everything through as if it was the race, and then that way you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's good. That's good insight for people who are looking to do longer races too. You know, don't just do it on race day.
Yeah.
Just
Yeah.
so why don't you talk us through a little bit about your training you did for 2023, and I want to compare it to 24 because obviously, but to be like, a lot of people are like, oh, this Edo kids come out of nowhere, but for me, definitely not the case because of like Coach Casey Club first. I sort of saw you before, and then like I guess the. I mean, how dedicated you are to it all, but also I feel like the first time we raced was Maui to Molokai 23, and I remember because one, I'd coached you, and two, you were using a foil that I'd helped Axis develop, and
Yeah.
like I was like, man, I remember look, I was it was mid channel, and you obviously didn't have the best start, and I remember seeing, I don't know what color board you're on, but I remember the color. I'm like, you're going. Like it was a, I can't remember
Was
what
a
color
bright
it was.
yellow board. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like seeing it and I'm like, man, this guy's flying. And you went past me. And like, I was like, I'm not keeping up with him. And then you came and then somehow I lost you. And then you passed me again and you fell off and then you passed me again. And I was like, everyone's going past me. I didn't know it was the same person because I just assumed you had. I was like, and then I realized it was you. I was like, fuck, Edo. He's like, he's moving and he's pulling off and he's still passing me. But to talk us through like racing last year because we didn't really debrief last year and then this year too.
So as far as preparation, I remember last year it was a lot about, for me at least, it was a lot about water time. I just want to do downwind after downwind and dialing in the gear as much as possible. And yeah, just I remember doing like four or five runs in a day, thinking that Hawaii Kai runs, by the way. So thinking that, doing so many runs would add up the miles as if it was a long race, and then that way I would see how I felt. Whereas this year I actually didn't do that much water time. I mean, relatively, I still went and I still did a Hawaii Kai run pretty much every single day, which is still a lot, but not as much as last year where I would do, two or three or four every single day. But this year, what I did was a lot more fitness. So I'd go to the gym for 30 minutes every morning, which isn't a lot. I mean, 30 minutes is easy to do. That's what I thought, you just do 30 minutes. That way you always gonna do it because it's just 30 minutes. It's not hard at all. And that was just kind of like weight training. And then
Everyone's gonna
go.
ask. Everyone's gonna ask what exercises, like, was it squats? Was it like upper body, lower body?
I would do one day upper body and one day lower body, but then I would do, upper body weights, and then I just do like 5 minutes of core exercises, and then I do the next day I do, squats and cleans and deadlifts, and then 5 minutes of core exercises. Nothing like, I mean, I don't think I'm that specific and into my training. I just do really simple exercises like squats, bench press, pull-ups, push-ups, and whatever, those basic movements. And it's really short gym sessions, so you can't squeeze in too much. But I think that was just good to have that, constant strength and blood flowing, and just like knowing how your body moves and knowing that you're prepped up. And then after that, in the afternoon, I'd go do a Hawaii Kai run where I just do it as if I was racing every single time. No cruising, just like start and pump all the way as much as I could till the finish. And it's only like 25 minutes, all these short, training sessions. But then I feel like if they're short like that, it's easy to tell yourself I'm gonna give 100% of what I got because it's so short and easy to do. And then after the Hawaii Kai runs, I would usually, not always, probably 3, 4 times a week, I'd go for like a 30, 40 minute run just to do some cardio. Or there's this hike right next to my house called Coco Head, and it's like steps all the way up. And if you race yourself, it takes 15, 20 minutes to get up to the top. So I do that sometimes. And this was all after downwinding. So it was all these like short, fun sessions to me. And but then you look back at the end of the day, you're like, oh, I did three activities today and I'm gonna do three activities tomorrow, but it's not even that bad. So I
Quality.
think, yeah, exactly. Quality training. And that's actually what I wanted to get to, and I was thinking about a lot is, instead of doing, like, I remember when I was windsurfing, and I guess this is also maturity, but I would look at my watch and be like, I'm gonna train 2 hours today, and be windsurfing and tacking and doing all these drills, and looking at my watch, oh, 1 hour 15, oh, 1 hour 30, 30 more minutes, let me see what I can do. And it would just be like a time thing, just trying to get to 2 hours. But I think that's not really the way to go. I think the way to go is short and just efficient, and that way you can put everything you got into the training session and make it a lot more effective. And also, I think this year having less time in my hands, because I was at work, was actually a good thing, because I woke up, had whatever, had to go to work, and then at work I'm like, fuck, I can't wait to get out of here and go downwinding. And I just really couldn't wait. I'd be driving and like, yeah, I can't wait to get in the water. Whereas last year I'd wake up and be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna downwind 3 times today. Like, not that exciting, right? But if you're super excited, I think it makes a big difference, and it makes those 30 minutes worth 2 hours of just passive downwinding.
Yeah, nah, for sure. And I think it's a good lesson. Like, people say, oh, I don't have time to learn that, this, that, the other. And if you're dedicated to it, even like you were last year, where you're just like, I think the way you did it's probably right, because last year, from what I could tell from my perspective, you needed time on the water to work the skills. Fast forward to this year, you had the skills. It was how do you get stronger? And I feel like downwind falling is a really technical sport when you're starting out. like beginner to intermediate. But once you get those skill sets, like once you can downwind and not come down for like the majority of the run, it's kind of like everyone's kind of the same speed. And so point of difference is going to be like fitness and strength. And I know you showed us that this year. You know, it was cool. Seriously, it was everyone was moving. And last year it was who could make the least mistakes. And this year it was like who's going to push the hardest. And it was like I wanted like after which what was the race after Palomar, I like was using a 770. Like, oh, you're using the 770? Like, that's kind of big. And I'm like, oh, that's what I've been using the whole time to train on.
Yeah.
And then after M12, you're like, come on, come race with us. And I put on the 680.
I remember
Yeah.
that. That's fun.
You're like, come on, stop boxing. You know, you're like, I know you want to win M2O. And I'm like, yeah, I just want to do my best for all of them. But you're right. If I want to be in the top five, I had to use a smaller foil. And I wasn't fit enough this year. I used a 680 and I could like for the first time mid-race, I could see you. And I'm like, okay. I'm like in the mix, and then my legs started cramping, so like just wasn't fit enough. Like I hadn't trained on the 680. I was training on the 770 most of the time and seeing how fast I could push that. And yeah, it was like I was stoked. I was stoked for how the racing went. And it, like you've set the bar for actually it's probably worth asking. Like when you're doing those Hawaii Kai runs, there were rumors that you were starting like at the finish line and pumping out to the win line.
Yeah, I mean, I do that. I think I have this like image that keeps replaying when I think of like a big part of my motivation for the training came from. I remember this one video of you because you went out, you fell out outside of China Walls last year's M2O, and then you had this insane paddle technique that just looked like you weren't even that tired, and you just went bop 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 and got right up. Whereas I look at videos of myself and I was like muscling like and just giving everything I got. So I was like, I think my what I need to improve is my flat water pumping and my paddle ups. So yeah, I would start from the finish line, last year's M2O finish line, and then flat water start and try to pump as far as I could out. I think I would do it like I got to the end of it and I'd do it in two tries. Like I'd fall and then get back up and then I'd be able to pump out to the wind line. That was my record with that. But
That's
yeah, that
good.
was
And
yeah, it was good
it's
training.
probably worth asking what size foil were you doing it on, you know, because that makes all the difference.
Yeah. I mean I was doing it, so initially I was doing it on my 700 Eagle X 700. And then, yeah, I think I was just using a 700. There's this prototype that I was using, high aspect, and then 700. They're both 700s. I did try to use the 600, and with the 600, I only really had one try to pop up flat water before I would use all my energy and not be able to get up again. It's kind of funny. I would go on flat water, start the 600, and I'd make it the first time. And then, as soon as I would try the second time, I could never get up. But the first time, I always had it. So it shows how much like energy you use. And the second try, you're already too tired to go again. Yeah.
So I guess, you know, that was probably also from last year's M2O, like with the flatter start on the smaller Art Pro, you kind of lost the race before you even started, but then you caught back up and nearly won it.
Yeah.
What 13 minutes sort of what like to get up and sort of into the race last year. And then getting back to pretty much the front or like just what did you get? Were you ahead of Oscar or no, you're behind Oscar.
I finished behind Oscar, but I got the, yeah, I was right behind Oscar. Yeah, China was.
And then obviously you got back in the race, but then you lost it again because you couldn't pump as far in. So you're working on those things that you learned last year.
Yeah, exactly. Just those things that I knew I was weak on, I made sure to work a lot on those, which is basically it all came down to fitness and flat water starting and paddle technique.
I guess for those listening, I think the reason that I made it look easy is because I was on an 860.
Oh.
last year. I was on a big foil. Like that was why the beginning I got up easy and even when I came down I got up again. But
I think it's still hard to do though, because you're so exhausted by the time you get to the finish, no matter what foil you're using.
sure.
I mean, you're standing the whole time, and I feel like you don't necessarily feel it, but all the blood and energy that you need to paddle up is not there when you try. Like, I remember falling in the Paddle Moule last year. I fell down, and it was so hard to get back up because you just don't have any energy.
As you said, like all the blood goes to the legs, and then all of a sudden you got to start paddling with your upper body, and it's like I don't know, it's also a super technical thing. You can't just you almost sometimes when you muscle it too much, it's actually working against you. It's there's this balance of muscling and like finesse, and obviously you've learned that. You're the champ. What else do I want to talk about? So obviously last year's M2O was that flat water start, flat water finish. This year we had epic conditions. I think everyone that didn't get caught in bow wash would agree that it was a pretty sick run. Like it was a good course for like pure downwind. A few people who I guess I've spoken to me about that didn't do the race but were following said it was. They said it was a bit less exciting to watch because of there was less changes, which, there was still you and Finn at the end, which I said sounded pretty exciting. But the last year was pretty exciting because of probably you, Edda. Like you were like probably way back in the pack when you came through the pack, and then you're pretty much fighting for first, and then you came back, and then I came down, and then Oscar came down, and then I paddled up past, and I guess the finish probably made it a bit more exciting. But like for us foilers, it was like a chess match, last year, whereas this year was like a freaking just shootout. It was just let's go, which I love for sure. Like I think it's there's pros and cons to both. I guess I spoke about a little bit after the race, saying it's become this like pumping game. And I didn't mean that. I think Andrew might have taken a bit of offense to it, but like I didn't mean it in like a negative way. Like there's still a lot of skill involved, and like pump fest, like it's a race. Like where like cyclists don't be like, oh, just because you're just one because you're the fittest. It's like, well, that's racing, right? Like we're all here to like test ourselves and push ourselves the hardest. But like, what's your take on the course change and like what do you think? What are your thoughts on it?
Regardless of the course, they're both a lot of, you still have to play it really strategically. If I were to do last year's course all over again, I'd focus a lot more on having a foil that can make the start and a bigger board that can make the start, but also a big board that can paddle fast when you're down and paddling. And also, yeah, a bigger foil that can pump. So whereas this year it was kind of like you don't really have to worry about the start at all because you're starting in the bumps
Bumps were
and you
crazy.
just need a foil that's, what was that?
Bumps were crazy this year.
Yeah, it was so, that's the easiest
That
place to start ever. That was my easiest pop-up ever.
was fun.
But yeah, you just need a foil that's gonna foil fast when you're downwinding and in the bumps because you're pretty much always in the bumps. So it was a lot of like strategy as far as what you're gonna choose and how you're gonna adapt to the course. But going back to last year, they're both really different courses that I don't think necessarily favor a specific type of athlete in any of the courses. Everyone can adapt to both. It just comes down to what's more important, something fun to watch for people or something more fun for the competitors. Or did you have more, would you say you won last year, but would you have more fun with
I would
this
say
like
I
last year?
probably had more fun this year. Like it
Okay.
was the course, like, it's like when you're doing a training run and like it's 15 knots or it's 30 knots, so like what are you gonna have more fun in? Like it's pretty obvious. Like even though like obviously it's pretty fun winning, but it's also like when you look back at the race, it's like, did I have one of those really good bumps that sort of really got me going? And it was like got the adrenaline and all that. Like I got adrenaline last year from being like in the front pack, whereas this year I got adrenaline just from the bumps themselves. So so as far as conditions were, and look, it was more than just where we started and finished. Like it was pretty windy and pretty good bumps that first 25K. Like the first half was pretty nuts for me anyway. Like it was, I was
I
doing.
agree. Yeah, the first half was so fun.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed the second half really flattened out though. That was, I mean, at least from the foil I was riding, I was really like this close from coming down. There
Yeah.
was a lot of parts where, especially at the end, where I was like, I don't know how much longer I can do this. Like, I really don't know if my legs are gonna give out before that finish. And I was just like imagining, when they do give out, like how much it's gonna suck that I'm just imagining this whole story. Oh, Edo was at the front and then he just like stopped and had to paddle the whole way and end up coming like 30th.
Yeah.
Your mind starts
Yeah,
playing all these
you might.
crazy
That's
games.
yeah. As I last year, I'm like, I was in the lead. I'm like, come on, legs, like just hold me till the way to the finish. And I came down. I was like, oh, imagine, like, I just had all these like little voices being like, you're not going to be able to get up, and you were leading most of the channel, and now you're going to come like 20th because you got to paddle the whole way. And I'm like, ah, oh. It's just
Yeah.
like you sort of like your mind's your enemy sometimes in those races, and it's like the devil and the angel, and you're like. Go,
Yeah.
you're just like, I got this.
You go from, yeah, I'm gonna make it, I'm not gonna make it, I'm gonna make it, and it's like, ugh. But time keeps rolling and you get closer to the finish, so that's a good thing.
Exactly. As long as you can like just squash the negative talk and like I even
Yeah.
started like I would like positive, like just positive talk in your head. You just like tell yourself, like you got this, it's just another kilometer, another 2Ks, whatever it is. And it's like, I don't know. I definitely like the mental side is something pretty big that we probably don't talk about enough, but sounds like,
Yeah.
like you had that negative sort of talk and you obviously overcame it.
Yeah. No, definitely. But I think going back to the courses, regardless of what course we will have in the future and what we've had, I still think that there needs to be more media coverage. Like, I think it would be so fun for people to watch if it was filmed right. Like, if there was like a live, at least of the top five of like live showing different angles of people passing each other in a commentary in the back.
Yeah,
Like
if you think about
almost
like
like Formula One, but obviously we're never gonna have the budget Formula One has. But like something similar to that, where you have five different filmers at the front, always on the front pack, and they're like interjecting and a commentator explaining what's going on. 'Cause I think it could really be super fun to watch.
I think
But
for M2O to be like the world championship, which like it is like in my eyes, it needs to step up its media coverage. Like it's
yeah.
the course is there, and they've got a few different options of courses, and whatever they want to do with it, I think it's sweet. But yeah, they've got to step up the coverage because it's like Dot Vision is kind of all they offer.
Yeah.
And then like, girlfriends and support crews and on the boats is actually a better insight into the race than the dots on the screen. And the number of people that have spoken to me about following the race and being so excited watching dots, I'm like, man, you need to find a new sport to follow. It's like it's hard.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. And I also think, what do you think about the course, like, I was thinking in the future, it'd be nice to have a sailing start, like a start where everyone crosses the start line moving, but there's judges looking at, like, looking at the flags and lining them up and making sure that no one's over. 'Cause right now, it's just if someone's over, it's not a big deal. You know what I mean? Nothing happens to them. Oh, that guy was over. Whatever. He still raced and he still won. Like, or still did good. It really doesn't matter. There's no, you can't really get penalized from crossing early or pushing the start line.
Oh,
And I even remember, yeah,
Paddle
paddling more, I was two moving boats. They were both in gear and they're just moving forward like that. And
and
no one, I mean, everyone was left behind at the start.
Well, like we started, like we were pretty much halfway to Hoekeeper already, you know, like it was a people were pushing, everyone was keen to get going, and it was, yeah, there's a, I think there's a lot, like it's early days is the best way to put it, you know.
Yeah.
And you and I didn't get, especially you didn't get too messed up in the boat wash, because you were the one putting off the boat wash. But everyone I've spoken to that was outside the top 20, or probably even outside the top 15, had a boat wash story, you know, that messed them up. And that's been the biggest feedback, I think. Like, it was probably more dangerous with that many boats than it was safe, which is kind of a crazy thought. But
Yeah.
that was the advantage of last year in some respect, that because different people got up at different times, that the boats were more spread out. Whereas this year, pretty much everyone got up. Like, I'd say 90% of people got up in the first minute, which meant 90% of boats were all creating wash within the first minute. And like, the boats were supposed to like come in at 15 minutes in or whatever it was. But the captains have a big job to do, and that's like not lose their foiler. So they get in there when they see it. But what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I've experienced it. So I've helped escort before, even for the, canoe paddling races. And it's honestly really tough to go and find your person because everyone's pretty much wearing the same things and everyone looks the same. But also, if you don't find them right away, they're just gonna get even more lost in the pack and you won't find them later. And canoe racing is a lot slower, so you can go back and forth and you go to the front, they're not at the front, you start making your way back. But with foiling, if you don't find your guy right away, they're gone. And if they're gone, I mean, I've talked to people whose escort boats couldn't find them pretty much the whole race. They only found them at the end, right next to the finish line. So it's tough to do, but I mean, there's some alternatives, like you not everyone has an escort boat, and there's different escort boats staying with different groups of people throughout the race, and maybe everyone could have like a radio to for safety measures, but it's just, are the organizers willing to take that step and that risk to just to benefit the racer's experience? I don't know.
Yeah, it's tricky. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, because I guess well, they took the step this year with the wing foilers, you know, like
Yeah.
EPIRB radios, and they could do it on their own. So I think the precedent's kind of been set by them. And maybe just like everyone pays like another $500 in like for escort or for safety vessels, like north, like three boats in the north, three boats in the south, one at the front, and you know, four at the back. You know, what's that? Six. That's 11 boats. Maybe you need more than that. Maybe you double it. It's still cheaper than everyone get paying for an escort, you know. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
It'd
exactly.
be interesting to see what
You have a
everyone.
big budget, that's for sure. You should have a helicopter.
Seriously. So, you know, we spoke a little bit about about it after the race, but you know, back when I did Molokai Tuawa on the SUP, there was look, there was prize money for the SUP, and for the foil there hasn't been, which is, you know, it leads to the
Yeah.
question, well, what's the registration paying for? And obviously there's like a lot of logistics involved. I'm not questioning, you know, M2O's, you know what they're doing, but it's also like, if you get 130 foilers on a start line, and you only get like 80 for the SUP and prone, how come the SUP and prone guys get prize money and the foilers don't? And look, maybe COVID
Yeah.
has changed that, because obviously, you know, it's amazing that M2O is still running after COVID, because you know they struggled a bit, you know, to get through that. But like, when I did SUP, there were like, I think there were 10 unlimiteds, like 10 in my division when I won, which is like nothing compared to foiling now. And I got money that paid for my escort boat. And now there's 100 and
Yeah.
something foilers. in one, like probably 90 in one division, and there's nothing to cover your escort, and there's like limited media coverage, and look, they get nice photos, and
Yeah,
then.
exactly. And I don't think it's all, I don't personally organize events, and maybe I should educate myself a little more before speaking about this, but isn't there sponsors that sponsor the events and cover a lot of the, the expenses and should cover the media coverage and prize money and things like that? I mean, I understand that we have a pretty big registration fee, but there's also a lot that could be done with, more media coverage and more sponsors that would love to support the event because it's honestly super cool, but it just has to be done. I mean, the event organizers would have to reach out and organize all that. But I also think, I mean, looking back at how it all started, I mean, none of them are foilers. None of them are going to be watching this. I don't think anyone organizing the event's really going to be watching this podcast, for example. So I don't
Maybe
know
that
how much
proves
of it
wrong.
it's just continuing a tradition.
Was just saying
Sorry,
maybe.
was I cutting out?
No, I was just saying maybe they'll prove us wrong, and they'll.
Yeah, exactly. If you are watching, call us out because I'd love to know. But maybe it's just continuing a tradition and foilings, changing a lot of things, and they're not willing to. I mean, they're certainly not foilers, so I don't know if that's something that's just the future and they just have to accept it, or if they're really willing to put more effort into this. I mean, personally, I was super excited to the whole year I was training, thinking about like winning and visualizing the whole thing and thinking about standing up on the podium and how it would have felt. But then when it actually happened, I remember they didn't even call the names right. Like the
Yeah, it was
announcers
pretty.
completely messed up the names and then also messed up the Triple Crown, and then they didn't give the right prizes. It was kind of, I mean, it kind of felt like for that to be a world championship, there should be a little bit more seriousness, and it didn't feel very, yeah, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Precious to win. But I guess that just comes from, I mean, the preciousness comes from yourself knowing how much sacrifice it takes and all that. But I think in the future it'd be nice to have a little bit more.
I think we spoke about it on awards night, and it was like, and look, I felt a little bit of that last year too. It was like, and it almost comes more from we build it up more in our heads because we care about it so much and we want to win. And then it comes and it's like there's almost big letdown because you've trained so hard for this thing and you finally got to it. And it's like, oh. And then it's like, oh, this is it. This is all it is. And in that respect, it's like they're never going to live up to the standards that we had hoped because we've built it up for a year in our heads. But in saying that, yeah, they stuffed up a few things this year. And I think I only give a benefit of the doubt. I know Shannon was going through a few, who was organizing. She was going through a bit. Her dad passed away, like the day before the race or the day after the race. So you got to give a little bit of leeway for sure for that. I don't know how that is.
Definitely.
But the fact that there's only one person really running it, like just Shannon, that's a lot to be falling on one person's shoulders. And I'm sure she had some help, but like she seemed to be the one that was, carrying it. There's more organizers for the SUP and prone than there was for the foil. And look, this is the first year of foil sort of standalone, which I think is always going to have those sort of teething issues. It should have been easier, because there's just the one discipline, like for the media and for the organ. I guess there's two disciplines because there's foiling, wing foiling as well. But if there's 10 people in wing foiling and 90 in the SUP, you obviously got to put a bit more emphasis on the SUP, which is, I would have thought, just you wouldn't make it 50-50. You'd probably make it 60-40 at least. But yeah, even the finish, I don't know what you think. Like this year, Do you think we should have finished a bit further in, like, or like on the beach, or I don't know, I felt like finishing out.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been ideal. I think that would have been cool to finish on the beach. And that's kind of what I was expecting, because I guess that was the whole point of finishing at Kaimana, was so that the crowd could be more part of the finish. And that would have been super, super cool. But I think it's just, it might be something to do with, permits and logistically. Is that even possible?
Yeah, you'd know better than me. You live in Hawaii, but I would have thought that, like, don't the six mans finish at like in Waikiki? And maybe they're not on the beach, but it's like, I thought the
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure if they finish on the beach though, but
that's probably right. Maybe that's just how it has
I
to be.
think closer, I mean at least a lot closer would have been pretty cool. That's something
Yeah,
for the future.
lots of. I think there's so many, like, finishing in Waikiki obviously has its pros and cons, and permit wise, I think there are obviously a lot of swimmers at Kaimana, so like to finish there is kind of a bit, beach goers, it would have been a bit gnarly to come in, but it seemed like there are a lot of people there for the foiling too, so maybe you just close it for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Even just if you have just like a chute, like a finished chute, and no one swims there, it seemed like there were ways around it, but it was easy for us from here to talk about it. But
I think, yeah, there's definitely ways around it. And
and
I
just
mean, the more media we get, the bigger the sport gets and the bigger of a deal it gets, they can shut down the whole beach, if it was legit enough.
yeah, exactly. So it'll be, I don't know, I think it's all up from here. And I
Like
guess,
if there's a marathon, they'll close all the roads.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can shut down one beach for a couple hours for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I guess, yeah, when I assumed we were finishing at the windsock, but we were finishing, like, I actually had to cut back out to finish. Like, I was so far in when I was coming, like, so it was even, and then even something as simple as like that, they said at the briefing, you've got to finish on the left of the marker, but we finished on the right of the marker between the boat and the,
Yeah.
there was, and all of that led to like the dodgy times, which led to the Kauakai Triple Crown being like added up wrong. And it's just, as you said, it's just a bit amateur right now, and we're pushing for it to be more pro, I guess, and that's, it'll get there. I think it's just time, and probably by the time it gets there, I don't know where we'll be, which is a bit of a shame,
Yeah,
but
I agree. But it will for sure.
yeah, it will get there. And then that sort of leads us on to the next question, and I guess the M2O was, I guess, the world championship. Like, I guess a lot of people have said they feel like they've dumbed it. Like, there was a meme going around, like the foil at times or something. It was like they were saying that they made M2O an easier race than it was last year. Because, last year obviously flat water start, flat water finish. We all went quicker than we did last year for, like, it was another 10Ks and we went quicker. Do you think they've dumbed down the course to make it more user friendly?
I think maybe for the average foiler, yeah, because not everyone can flat water start, and not everyone wants to paddle for 30 minutes on their belly at the end. But I think for at least like the top 15, top 20, it's just a matter of getting. I mean, this year we all use smaller wings because we know that we still need to push ourselves. I mean, I think that top tier that's really competitive adjusts to whatever course to make it just as hard as it was before because they need to be competitive. I mean, an easier course doesn't mean we're going to take it easier. We're still going to get as competitive as we can to win and push ourselves. So I think the only change was we're going to use smaller foils, which in turn made it just as hard, I think.
Yeah, my body had a harder time this year than last year. Maybe that was training, but it was like,
Yeah.
yeah, you know. So it was the thing that gets me is that if the sup and prone guys start in the flat and then the upwind, like for a foil, it just in terms of this tradition aspect, like the tradition of finishing at China Wall, I guess. It took us what 2 hours. Most the top guys were under 2.5 hours last year to the finish. That included the half an hour paddle upwind. The sup guy this year did it in 5.5. So like it's twice as almost twice as long a race. And the foilers are whinging about paddling upwind for half an hour. The sup paddles upwind for about half an hour as well, you know? And they've just done
Yeah.
5 hours. So that's the only like that's my initial feeling towards it was that, but like I don't want to be like sour grapes. I was stoked. Like I said, I had more fun this year than I did last year. But I think the sport has to go this way. I think it does need the more people that get that do the world championship, like the bigger it's going to become. So if we can get, almost 100 sup foilers rather than last year was like, I don't know, was it 60 last year? I can't remember. It was less, it was a lot less.
Yeah, 50, 60. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we can get more people doing it, great. But then I guess I spoke about like different things to make to change it up. And not necessarily for M2O, but like have a bit more. You could almost have two courses. You'd have like a pro course and then like a begin like or intermediate course. And like the pro course, you can just make more difficult and you can make it more tactical. Not saying that this year wasn't tactical, it was because we're using smaller foils, but by having more varied conditions like we did last year, it does add another layer of complexity. Whereas this year, obviously the last bit was harder because the foil choice for the first half was like a lot of fun, and the second half was like, okay, this is hard. But we're not going upwind, we're not going, it's not flat water like at any stage. So my ideas,
Yeah.
and I'm just trying to make the sport sort of, I guess, I don't know, less of a like we all got into the sport of downwind foiling because it's like fun and it's like surfing. Like I'm sure you're the same. It's like this is epic. Like Kaiko's runs, like you're just literally doing top turns the whole way down the run. As it gets more and more serious, it becomes less and less like that. And I think we can both agree on that. Like it's fun. It's fun to go fast, but there's a
For
point
sure.
where you're pushing so hard that it no longer is fun. And I kind of,
I mean, we both took a long break after that race, and so I mean, everyone that I've talked to that I was racing with, they're like, "Yeah, bro, I haven't really foiled in the last month and a half," because
exactly. Because it's like when,
everyone was just over that. Yeah, it's not
and
that
like
fun anymore to go
the times
straight
that I
into.
have downwinded since M2O, I've taken out big foils and just done like these sort of like surfing runs. So what I'm trying to do is bring that essence back into racing. And look, I don't think the style of racing we did is wrong, but the fact that we all wanted a break afterwards, maybe it just says that, it's not wrong, but it's maybe we're at a point now in foiling that we can sort of choose, we're at the top and we can direct which way it wants to go. So we can make it this straight downwind shootout, pumping like up and over bumps. And that's cool. Like I totally respect that. And I think that's a seriously cool sport, but it's like pretty serious maybe. And like more, I sort of liken it to road cycling, like it's spinning and it's going as hard as you can. And the way I want to take it is more towards like mountain biking. Make it a little bit more technical, have a few more sort of ups and downs, and fitness still is a huge factor in mountain biking, but there's also the technical aspect that opens it up to a bit more fun, maybe. But maybe at the end of the day, you put it this way and it's still going to be a fitness thing, but you can sort of tweak it and make it a little bit more surfing. So but that was my ideas, and like the markers, and maybe like one little upwind leg, you got to go around a marker, or you've got the, like, I don't know what the answer is, but I was just like brainstorming in like my post race debriefing stuff, and I want to sort of ask you, like, what would you change about the course, and not necessarily M2O course, but what would your ideal downwind race be for fun, like for a fun race that everyone can get around, rather than being an up and over pumping race?
I mean, I personally like the road biking aspect, like making it like a running race. That's, I mean, I like to challenge myself and it's not fun. It's, I think someone told me recently, they're like, that's type two level fun. Type one fun is like you're doing it and you're like, this is awesome. Type two is like when you're doing it, you're in pain, but then you look back at it and you're like, okay, that was sick. I feel good about myself.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And that's kind of what it was. It's just, it's painful the whole way. It's not fun. You're hyper focused. You're getting cramps. You're exhausted. You can't wait for it to finish. I mean, even when you're training, you're just training for the race to finish and see what you place. You're not training to have a good time in the race. It's just like, it's a journey that's super fun to be on. And then, but it's not necessarily like, it's fun because of the program and seeing your progress and being a linear race, in terms of not having too many variables that are gonna mess you up, but I see what you're saying and making it more fun and but I don't necessarily like, personally I like the way it is right now and I like the way it's going, as in just being a tough straight running race pretty much. But I also think that there could totally be two different circuits, like one being, and people could join both, one being the road biking and one being the mountain biking. And when I think of mountain biking and foiling, the first thing that came to my mind was having some sort of like gnarly groundswell aspect where you have to navigate between like a little bit bigger waves. Like I just imagine like going up and over or down the line on some, at least, head high waves. That makes it a little bit scarier and sketchier, just like mountain biking when you're going downhill. Like what if it was a downwind run combined with like a lot of groundswell that you can go down the line of, where it's like you can take that risk and go fast down the line and get scared, where you're not necessarily working hard physically, but it's just like a little bit gnarlier and takes a lot more technique, and then be able to connect bumps, kind of a mix of both.
There was a race when I
That'd be
first
some.
started downwind SUP paddling down in Victoria called the Sawtooth Race. And so basically it was a downwind run, but there was point breaks along the way. So you literally you downwind and then you'd surf down the point and you have to go around a marker on the inside and you have to pump back out to, and you have to paddle back out to the wind line, then you downwind to the next point and you'd surf down the line and go around the marker and then go back out to the wind line. And I think something like that, obviously you can't do everywhere.
That sounds
That'd be pretty fun, I think. And like you'd obviously the benefits of that to me for the fun factor and the type one fun, not the type two fun, is that you get people like I'm thinking ha, it my concern is if we continue along this type two sort of fun, you're gonna lose a lot of people that got into it at the start for the pure downwind thing. And maybe those people will never want to race, and maybe that's fine. Maybe they don't want to race. But maybe we can combine the two. Maybe we have one this way and another this way, like you said, and I think that's cool too. But like, you could definitely have, you got the downwind, and then you got the wave riding, and then you got the pump back out, and there's this combo of three different, like, kind of three different foil choices, which is kind of what it comes down to. The downwind's going to be the best for one thing. The surf and the downwind are going to be close, but then you've got to pump back out, so you've got to like maximize like three different speeds because the wind bumps are generally slower, the waves are generally faster, and then the pump back out is obviously going to be like that's going to be hard, it's going to be even slower again. So to me, that's the formula, and that's what I was talking about. Like for M2O, you could have like markers that are really far north and then really far south, and you've got to traverse because I couldn't have traversed any harder than what I was. Like if the race was even harder on the foil that I was on, I wouldn't have like probably finished. I would have come down and had a bit of a struggle. So if we had put these markers in, they had to go across and across the other way and then a little upwind and then down again, like that would have been really hard on the foil that I was on and I would have sized up. Therefore,
Yeah.
I would have assumed you would have done the same thing, and then you sort of limit the up and over sort of aspect of it, which is that was my idea. And like I said, a lot of people took it as I was like saying that this race didn't count or whatever. And it's like, no, this race is full legit. Like everyone was pushing, everyone knew what the agenda was. We were going fast and we're doing the best that we could to go fast. And it was a fitness strength type two fun sort of thing, which we're all signed up for. But for the future of the sport, is that where we want, like, if I'm a wing foiler and I'm listening to us talking about this downwind racing, how it is, I'm probably not going to get into downwind foil racing because to pump,
It's a little scary though.
you know what I mean? Whereas if I'm a wing foiler and I hear that, you know, you're surfing more and you're like, I don't know, I'm just wondering how we make it like keeping it for those type one people, the type one fun people, I guess is the.
I think then you would also need to like shorten it a lot because regardless of what you're doing, a 2 hour race is never gonna be fun, I think. I think that would be like a 30 minute, a 30 minute kind of thing where you're going down waves. That sounds super exciting.
Maybe we like imagine Paddlemoor instead of how it has been the last 2 years, like a marker's on the reef and you have to like surf. Like it's not gonna happen, but like imagine if there was a race just for foiling on a Maliko run and you had to sort of surf in and out through the reefs and then cut back out and then finish at the harbor. Like I don't know, I'm just like, because Paddlemoor has always been my least favorite race of the foiling races in Hawaii the last 2 years because man, it is hard. That is like, that's the full
Yeah, it's
sprint
fine.
that, you know, and that should be the most fun one, realistically.
It has potential to be for sure. But then I guess one thing that would come in with that happening is like, what if I feel like everyone would be complaining about, oh, I didn't catch the same wave that the person behind me caught. They caught the bomb and then they caught up to me.
Absolutely. And that's like in Australia, we have like the surf life saving sort of races, and people call it like if you're at the back and you caught a wave in front, they call it jagging. You just jagged everyone. Like you weren't the strongest, but you got lucky. And that's why I think it's probably important to have both. You know what I mean? Like you've got your straight shot, and like, you know, you proved you were the guy this year, you know, and if you got unlucky with a wave, then that would have, it was, you know, then that would have sucked because you earned the win. But like, then if you have this other race, that's like, I just think there's room for more. Like, think about you're about to go to Hood River. Think about like a slalom kind of downwind course, like hatch, like what's it, Swell City through the hatchery, and you sort of a time thing, or you could even have a few people going down at the same time and like start at the start line, and then you got to go around these markers. I reckon that'd be sick, you know? It'd be super fun. Whereas if it's
Yeah,
just
that would. That's cool.
if you were to race Swell City to the Hatchery, or I'm not sure it's the right way, but if you were to race that, it wouldn't be fun. You know, you'd just be pumping as fast as you can straight. Whereas if you were to add these markers and have like a two people at the same time and you get the inside on one and the inside on the other,
Yeah.
I'm trying to, I don't know, I'm just brainstorming. Like what could we make it be? We have like the, we, no, no one's grabbed foiling, like foil racing anyway, by the horns and said we're going this way. And I think us as athletes have the power and we can kind of make it what we want. And if we want to be
That's
straight,
true.
let's do it. But I think majority of people probably don't, from people I've spoken to. And I think it's there's this opportunity to grow it into what we want. And that's, I guess that's me. That's my rant.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, like we said, there's so much room for improvement and there's so much direction to take. So it's definitely a good time to start brainstorming and trying new things to see what works and what people like doing and how we can grow this sport altogether.
Yeah, and that's I'm just worried that people are going to see racing and be like, no, I'm just going to just downwind, just like free surf downwinding. It's like surfers won't want to compete because like I don't like the competition, but hopefully we can make the racing like as good as the free surf. And it should be, it's a celebration of everyone being together and downwinding, and that's the beauty of it. Like a couple of years ago, I sort of came up with this concept called the King of the Cutback, and that was basically point, it's like a point score rather than a race. It's still a race, but it's like point A to point B. You have a GPS, The fastest person, they get 1 point. The slowest person, they also get 1 point. The person who does like the fastest average speed gets 1 point. The person who gets the slowest average speed gets another point. And then like the person who's who has the most distance gets 1 point. Person who has the least distance gets 1 point. So you kind of even it out and you make the person who's last, like you celebrate them as well as the person who comes first. It was just a way to try, like I was just trying to create, like a lot of the time we go to races and it's usually, you know, like there's five, maybe 10 people that could potentially win it. And then there's everyone else. And if there's everyone else, what are they doing it for other than just being a part of it? And like that'll grow old. How do we get them involved a little bit more? And a lot of the time there's like age groups and that gets them involved because then you have like 5, 10, 15, 20 people who are involved now. But there's still like in FM2O, there's still 80 or like 90 or 70 people that are still, you know, not really in it for the race. But if you can make it that everyone has a chance to win something, then it's, I don't know. I'm just, you know, we're just trying to make it. I'm trying to make it more of a sport because it's sick right now, but there's so much potential.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I just feel like we're in the cusp of, oh, we're kind of beyond that now, but we're in the cusp of it really being something, like you said, like a world tour, like you're going to Hood River now. It's not really a race there, it's just AWSI, but it's like a lot of the downwind fall community going there. And then, are you going to France this year? Yeah. So then it's Crozon.
Yeah, I'm going to France too.
Yeah. So it's, that's cool. Like we're, I don't know, pioneering this sport. I feel like the racing side of it anyway, you know, obviously people have been doing it for a while now, but it's becoming something, which is I'm proud to be a part of it.
Exactly. We need some more races in Australia. We need some
Yeah,
more
come to
international races.
Western Australia has three races this year in November. So it's like the 21st to the 28th. So if you come for a week, you could do three races. So it's,
Oh, wow. Okay.
yeah, there's one 30K race that's called the West Coast Downwinder. And then there's two, they call it the Triple S. So it's the Sunset Surf Ski Series because they're just surf ski races, but they include the foils. And they're like 10 to 12 Ks, but good conditions. Like there's the doctor, so it's a south westerly wind. And yeah, I'm heading over there for that. I can't get to France, but yeah, and then there's also a race in Sydney, my hometown, called the 20 Beaches, and that's around the last 2 years. We've had pretty bad conditions, unfortunately, but it's just a luck of the draw. Like we don't have trade winds. We not like WA or Hawaii, but it can get good. Like I've had better runs at home than I have in Hawaii, for example, but that's because I live there and you sort of get the best of it. So it can get really good, but it's just like the wind is like 2 out of 7 days, not 7 out of 7 days like it is in Hawaii in summer. But this year is the first year that it for the foil end, it's going to be it has been like a 20K race, but this year will be like 28 to 30K race because they've extended it. They've got the permits to start from the original spot, so Manly to Palm Beach or Palm Beach to Manly, depending on the wind direction. So that'll be fun. That's a cool race, 20 beaches. And if anyone's coming, let me know. Edo, you got a place?
Hopefully it's windy.
What's that?
Yeah, I think hopefully it's windy this year, but I definitely think I'm gonna look into it more. I'd love to come and go downwind in different places.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, I don't know, like I've did a few. I've been in Portugal at the moment, and I was in the UK like last week. And there's all obviously the bumps are all different, but they all have some sort of similarity. It's not like every wind chop is different everywhere you go. It is a little bit, but it's like you can do it everywhere. It's pretty cool. It's it all works. Yeah. I think that's all the questions I had for you, mate. Anything you want to leave us with? Obviously, maybe a quick one on Axis versus F1. Obviously, you've joined F1 now, and how's the vibes with F1?
I mean, F1's been super great. They're supporting me with everything, and I love the constant I mean, what's super important in this sport that everything continues to progress and innovate is that they keep sending prototypes and we keep tweaking things and trying new things. And I mean, a lot of the things we try may not work, but it's cool to continuously just like entertain those ideas of wondering, oh, I wonder if we added this to the front wing, or I wonder if we did a mask that thin, what would happen? And trying all these things that may or may not work, and hopefully bring the next new thing and new addition to the foiling products. But I think all the brands all together, they're all great in their own ways, and it's just a matter of seeing what feels right for you. But yeah, continuous innovation I think is key for all the foiling brands out there.
Yeah, and actually, I didn't ask, but what dimensions of board were you using for M2O? There's a lot of.
It was just an 80, 100, 106 liters, and it was 17 inches wide.
And your what are you in kilos weight wise? What do you
Sorry,
weigh?
what was that?
What do you weigh?
Oh, I think at the time that I raced, I was 83 kilos.
Cool. That backs up my
Yeah.
formula, like your body weight times 1.3.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that's good. I like to get the stats.
You were also on a smaller board, right?
Yeah, I was
Because
on
there was a lot
76.
of okay.
Yeah, and I was on 105 liters, and I'm like 85 kilos. The dad bod's really catching up to me, but a little bit heavier. But I think 2 liters. Marcus won't make me a bigger board. He says I gotta lose weight. Yeah.
That's
No.
funny.
But I think that's it, mate. Like, I think, and at paddle height, that's something that people always ask. Like, are you using like a handspan above your head? Or you sort of move your head and we can see?
I was just pretty much at my, yeah, there
Yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
I was reaching out really far, but I think it's just about on my eyebrows.
Yeah. I guess
That's kind of like
that's pretty
forehead
short.
about here. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like
Yeah,
probably
I like a
two or
shorter path.
three fingers like above my head at the moment. But shorter, better for sprinting for sure. Longer,
Yeah.
not so good when you're up on foil, as you can kind of see when you go
Yeah.
a long way down. Not everyone can do that flexibility thing that you got going
Yeah, right.
on.
I think a longer paddle gets me a little scared though that I'm gonna hit my foil when I go when I bring it down. So I like to have a shorter one.
Yeah, for sure. Move that bottom hand up a little and you'll get more reach. You won't have to hinge so much. See that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
See that, yeah.
Yeah. But that's, I don't know, did you freaking crushing it? I'm stoked to see you get the win. Like, you were dominant like the whole week in Hawaii this year. So it was like I was stoked to get a bit of a battle with Finn. Actually, maybe did you feel like there was a battle going on there, or did you like tell us about, I guess, that last little bit? Because we didn't really
Oh,
go through
definitely,
the
yeah. Yeah, I mean, in both races, was it Maui was second pretty much the whole race, and then Kane went down at the finish. He gassed out, and I was able to pump all the way to the finish. So that's how I got first. And then in Molokai Tuahu, I was also second until China Walls, and then on that last bit from China Walls to Kaimana, I powered through and I caught up to Finn. But I also think it's, foils are some foils are better in flat water and they glide more, and some foils can go are better in the bumps. So it's kind of like you might not gain in the bumps, and then what happened to me is that I gained a lot when it got flatter in that China Walls to Kaimana section. So yeah, I was never really first and dominating the whole race. It just always came down to the finish. And that's why I thought it was super competitive, because I mean, if Yeah, I always have to really work hard and believe in it till the end for it to actually work out. It was never just start first and then don't see anyone and finish first.
Yeah, for sure. That's true. M2M, I beat Kane in the end. He paddled like the whole way in, I think. So it shows how
Yeah,
important.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it shows, I guess, how close it was, maybe, but
Exactly.
it was a long paddle for Kane. So maybe not that close. And
Yeah.
then, yeah, and then that's interesting, actually. So you were saying that you were not as fast as Finn in the bump, like in the big bumps, and then when it flattened out, I guess you were able to glide a bit more sort of between or through and over. And then he came down, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like towards the end as well, by the lighthouse, I'd heard.
Oh, really? No, I didn't. I mean, I was way ahead from at that point. So I don't really know what happened, but I just remember in the bumps I was trying as hard as I could and he just kept getting away from me. And then as soon as we hit the flat section, I saw that it was getting closer and closer and closer. And that kind of motivated me and was like, okay, this is my money time. I have to put all my energy in now because this is where I'm going to be able to get closer. This is where I finally gain on him. So
Yeah, no, that's good. I guess
this is how the portal works.
I'm glad to hear that, because obviously I didn't see that from the from
Yeah.
where I was, and like I just sort of saw everyone ahead. I'm like, yeah. I guess it's just those guys again, but I felt I could see the speed that Finn was running in M2M because I started like right next to him and we're sort of going bump for bump, and yeah, he just kept like, getting away. He was moving, but obviously, not enough for those races to beat you. But I'm glad to hear that it was like not just like as the conditions change, like we spoke about, as the conditions changed, the advantage sort of swung from one person to another in terms of foil choice,
Yeah.
and that, yeah, that's good to hear, because obviously I didn't feel that as much. I just felt my leg cramp up and I'm like, okay, I'm done. But it was
Yeah.
yeah,
We need those anti-cramp packets.
honestly, I don't think it was cramp. I think it's like, like there's cramp and it's like from not enough salt, and then there's like muscle fatigue from too much like lactic acid.
Yeah.
That's what got
And
me.
they
And
just lock up like that. Is that how you
yeah,
found
it's like it kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but I had it on the sup and I
it?
like dialed my nutrition to a point that it was like, yeah, this is as good as I can get it, and I'd still have like muscle spasms. Like it's it like and it comes down to training. I honestly think it's like if you it means you're spending too much time with your heart rate too high, and I don't know, not training for that sort of level of intensity. So I was kind of expecting that when I'd put the 680
Yeah.
because I hadn't trained it, but it was I was stoked. It was the, as I said before, it was the race I felt like I was in with a shot for like a top five finish, but I just kind of fell apart. But that's all good. Is there anything you want to leave us with? Like, you're the king, mate. It was cool to see Ko Kai champ, M2O champ. You're gonna back up in France, come to Australia, show us how it's done. I wanna,
I will come to Australia, mate. No, I'd love to, for sure. I think, what can I leave you with? I mean, just at the start of the podcast, we talked about how 2 years ago, or yeah, about 2 years ago, I couldn't even stand up on the board. And then a week later, I could finally paddle it around. And then after that, I started doing downwind runs. And it's just all a progression. And we're all, every single one of us is pretty much new to this because the sport is new. So, for anyone trying to get into it, don't think that it's not for you just because you can't do it the first time. It's gonna take a while, like it took for everyone, and it'll click. So yeah, I think everyone should give it a try, and if they do find it interesting and think it could be fun, and race with us next year
Yeah, awesome.
or in these upcoming races.
Yeah, the races, there's plenty of races coming. Nah, awesome, mate. Nah, I'm stoked to get the time to chat to you. Honestly, I think I really respect you, and I'm stoked to see your success, and even just get your your views on things, and I think they're good. I agree with them. I think it's like there's many ways to do it, and I think you're leading the way. You're showing us how it's done, and commitment, honestly, commitment, to it, and let's keep making this sport better because I think it's I love it. I think it's a cool sport, and let's keep pushing.
Exactly, yeah. I love it, and I think we highlighted some very good points, and it's great to talk to you too, because we have similar perspectives, but we also can highlight different things. So it's always good and great innovation talking to together.
Yeah, good little brainstorm session.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. No. Well, I'm gonna stop the recording and thanks everyone for listening. Let us know what you think and stay tuned for the next one.
Thank you.